I don't know about you, but I'm excited to hear what he has to say tonight. So please welcome Mike all the way from Oildale. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'm excited to hear what I have to say tonight, too. These Oildale boys that are sitting over here, they're here to make sure that I tell the truth. They'd like to, if you ask them, to tell you they're here because they love me and they're here to support me, but I know better. First of all, I'd like to congratulate and welcome everybody that took chips this evening. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is, sometimes I'm at a loss on how to describe this. It's just an amazing journey. One thing I wanted to say was last week our speaker, Ted, from Fresno, he kind of warned us that beforehand that he might uncontrollably become emotional and break into tears. And he just told us up front that was going to happen. And he held it together pretty good. My warning will be is you may hear this through the microphone. And that just means that I'm getting excited. That's really all that means. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad that any time that I have an opportunity to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous, to do what was done for me, to just kind of freely give what was given to me when I got here, even though I heard those words, and I really didn't understand what they meant. I didn't understand much of anything when I got here, except that there was just this exposed feeling that I was kind of at home and I kind of belonged. Now that belonging feeling was a mystery. It was new, but there was something there. I couldn't identify it, but from the first meeting that I went to, it became apparent that it was going to be necessary to go back to another one. Didn't know why, didn't really want to, but that was just kind of what was taking place. I got sober. That sounds funny. I got sober December 13th, 1985, and it wasn't my fault. I was politely requested to leave the building, so to speak. And the building was any building where anybody knew me was I was no longer welcome. It was pretty much all over. And I've said here recently, I worked my way into a spot that I couldn't get out of. And a single sentence ended my drinking, using career, even though I didn't know that's what was going to happen at the time. That sentence was, you'll never see your children again. That was one spot that, in fact, it was that point in my life. I was almost 33 years old. I didn't know any way out. I couldn't figure out how I was going to manipulate or maneuver or lie or cheat or whatever, you know, my normal MO was out of this position. So I kind of surrendered myself to a rehab facility in Fresno. Walking into that place, I had no idea that I would go from there to here, whether here is today or what it was, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever it happened to be. I just had no vision of what it meant to live a life that didn't involve alcohol and drugs. No clue. I was going there because I had nowhere else to go. I had completely run out of choices. And, I've been pretty self-sufficient up to that point since I was 17 years old. I left home at 17 after I graduated from high school and haven't been back since. So I was pretty convinced that I could take care of myself and I didn't need yours or anybody else's help. Thank you very much. That's how I operated. And if you didn't want to operate in those parameters, then I didn't need you in any fashion in my life. That was just the way that it was. It was going to be my way all the time, period. Seemed normal to me. Seemed to work for quite a while, too. And that all changed. You know, and the drinking thing, I've said for years, my drinking is just like your drinking. My using is just like yours. You know, the names and faces are changed to protect the innocent, but other than that, it's all the same. It started out as fun. You know, I mean, it was a lot of fun when I was younger. You know, we were chased around by four of the biggest men I've ever seen in my life in San Luis Obispo one night. I was a sophomore in high school. We were over there trying to track down some girls that we knew that grew up in the same town that we did. We kind of pissed these guys off a little bit, and they didn't like it. So we decided to pull the car over, and we were going to let them know. There were six of us, you know. We were all of 16, 15 years old. Well, there was four of them, and they were probably in their mid-30s, and one of them made about three of us, and they were going to have their way with us. So from about 1 o'clock till about 3:30 in the morning, they chased us around San Luis Obispo, and the cops came. The cops knew all four of them. They knew these guys. And I don't know whether these guys were cops, they were off duty or whatever, but we were running through neighborhoods, jumping over fences, banging on people's doors in the middle of the night, because once we saw who they were, we were now kind of scared. So, you know, and the cool part about that is Monday morning when we're back at school, those are hero stories. You know, in the locker room, those are the cool stories. Those are the stories that the younger guys want to hear. And so that's what we did. You know, you'd start out drinking on a Friday night and no telling what the adventure was going to be. It was fun. I remember there was a bunch of girls in the little town we grew up in, and they were having this big slumber party, and, you know, it's like, well, this is common sense. We're going to drink, and we're going to go up there to the slumber party. What else would you do? I mean, there's no movie theater in this town. There's not really much else to do, so we do this, and we're in there, and somehow I wound up being the only guy left in the room with all these girls that I'm in high school with, and I'm semi-unconscious, but I kind of hear what's going on. I'm pretty drunk, and I hear one of them say, "Let's take his pants off." Fine by me. And in that moment, I knew I was going to puke. You know? Just horrible timing. Horrible timing. So, again, small little town. So I get up, I run outside, and I'm in the middle of the road, puking my guts out, standing with my hands on my knees, and when I look up, there's a pair of headlights 10 feet from me, and it just so happens to be the principal of the high school and his wife. They didn't bother to just go around and leave me alone. They parked right in front of me and watched, and then the girls wouldn't let me back in the room when it was all over with. I didn't understand that. You know, then it became necessary after it quit being fun. You know, life started happening. And I didn't know how to deal with anything in life. Well, that's not really true. I did know how to deal with it. You don't. That was my choice. Don't feel it. Don't think it. Don't acknowledge it. You know, if I do this, you can't see me. That's kind of how it worked. You know, and if I close my eyes today and I think about the darkest moments, it's a long way from here. You know, it's an absolutely long, long way from here. In fact, it's easy to hear when you hear people in meetings talking about the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I close my eyes and think about those moments and then open my eyes and look at all of you, it's like there's no other way to describe that but a miracle. You can't get from where I was, where you've been, to where we are today without it being a miracle, without it not being my fault, my idea. That's the only way to describe it. The end of mine was, the saddest part about this to me as I look back is I didn't know. You know, I didn't know that this was bad. I didn't know that this wasn't normal. I didn't know that this was socially unacceptable. I just didn't know. My day started at about 5 o'clock every morning. I would come to in my living room because I was no longer sleeping in my bed. I would remove a cassette tape from under an ottoman, use what was on the cassette tape, take a shower, go to my company car. remove another cassette tape that was prepared the night before, because I'm a planner. There was a 7-Eleven, 24-hour 7-Eleven across the street from my house. I would drive over there, buy a six-pack of beer, drive to work. It was about a 12-mile ride to work, so I was okay by the time I got there. Walk around the shop for a little bit so everybody see number one salesman, that's a joke, was out working. And, you know, by 7 o'clock, I was on the road. And the road for me was I would leave Shafter and drive to Fresno. And I would drive around Fresno a little while, and I would come back. And when I got here, I would turn around, and I would go back. And I got there, I would turn around, and I would come back. And I did that till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So it was every day for the last 2 months that I was out there. You know, on Sundays, of course I have to work. I'm in agriculture. Nobody quits working. I would do that on Sundays. And I didn't understand that it wasn't appropriate, that it wasn't right. When I get home at night, I had three young children. I convinced my wife she'd had a hard day and she needed to go to the mall. And while she was gone, I would continue from my back bathroom. I had a house that was shaped like an L, and there were windows all along the side, and I would go to my back bathroom, and the entire time she was gone, maybe an hour, maybe two, after I came out of my bathroom, I would go from window to window to window, working my way around the house, because whoever they were out there. And that's how I spent my days. And I didn't know that that's not right. And the really interesting part was, you know, I had tried to quit without knowing that I was quitting a lot of times. In September of 1985, I was over in Avenel getting ready to go to a big party and had been drinking at my folks' house all day. And I had two boys at the time. One of them was 18 months old. As I'm getting ready to go to this party, I'm walking through the kitchen, and I said, "Where's Todd?" And I look through a window. Todd is face down in the swimming pool. From that day to this day, I do not remember touching the ground from the moment I saw him until I was in the pool. And even though I had no use for, discussion with, or need for any type of God, I was screaming at him. Don't let, and you could have heard me from Visalia, don't let this happen. Make it be me. I'll do anything. Don't take this little boy. Well, he's just turned 27 years old, and he's a pain in the ass. That's what it boils down to. That's a whole other story. But I knew that night that there was no need for my behavior. I knew it. In here, I knew I didn't need alcohol. I didn't need drugs. This is what life is about. I had another, what I thought at the moment, solid purpose for not doing this, for not living like this. It was September the 3rd. My wife was pregnant. I didn't know at the time, but I had a little girl on the way. She was born October the 11th. And so from September the 3rd to October the 11th, I was good. I was happy. You know, I was fulfilled. I was all those things that I wanted to be. And no notion that anything was any different than how I thought it should be. You know, I had the tragic event in my life that opened my eyes, that allowed me to see. My daughter was born. My mom was down at my house watching my two boys. I went home and took a shower and said, "I'll be back in a little while." I drove 30 miles, broke into a farm shop building, took everything that was in that farm shop building that I needed, enough that, you know, you might be found in a ditch somewhere if they knew who did it, and I was gone from October the 11th till December the 13th. And that's what that period was like. No intention, desire, thought that that's what I was going to do. None whatsoever. Just baffled as to how I got here. And about December the 7th, something along those lines, I'm sitting at my office. My phone rings. It's my wife. She didn't call me by my name. She called me something else. And she said, "And you'll never see your children again." That was enough. And that led me to this place in Fresno that I went to. And I went up there and I stayed there for, it was a 30-day program. I did it in 28. That's still the record. You know, but that's how, still how I was when I walked in there, you know. My ego was so out of control, you know. They make me tell my story. I whine and cry about my dad and blah, 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 and they use words like denial. Huh? What does that mean? What are you talking about? Just sit and listen. Just be quiet. Just be still. So I go through this thing, and, they introduce me to the book. They introduce me to the steps. You know, we're going to work 1 through 4. And it's a little fill-in-the-blanks type thing, and it was easy to do because the answer to question 1 was in paragraph 1. And, you know, it took like 3 minutes to do this. Okay, fine, you know. And, you know, by the third day, I'm showing other guys who've been there longer than me how to do it. You know, it's like, this is just... But you know what? The food was good. I slept for the first time in months. And I got some cool pajamas, you know, those hospital deals. Those are pretty cool. And so I go through this thing. And there's some controversy in this. And then on Christmas Day, I get a hall pass. I get to go home. So I go over to Avenel, and my whole family's there. And I didn't realize how much they didn't want me there till it was too late. I was already in the door. And they really didn't want me there. I mean, really didn't want me there. But I hung around today. So when by the time I left, not knowing what's going on, I'm pretty pissed off by the end of the day. You know, how dare you treat me like this? You know? And so I go back, and as soon as I get back, you know, put us in the bus and take us to another one of these meetings. It's Christmas, for God's sake. Why are we going to another one of these meetings? You know, just shut up and get on the bus. I get on the bus, and we go to this meeting over some dry cleaners in Fresno we've been going to. I kind of like this meeting that we've been going to. I've been there to a couple of them. So on this night, these guys, these old-timers there, were making a decision. They were taking a group conscience, which is how we do things, that they were going to close the meeting. They were going to go from an open format to a closed format. They really didn't want the alcoholic addict sharing in their meeting. Yeah, that's about enough. I've had just about enough of this crap. I got up and left. Walked down the stairs, and it's only about 2 miles back to my car out in front of this hospital, and I'm done. I am leaving. And from behind me, I hear the voice of this young girl that's in the program with me. She's 19 years old. "Where are you going?" And I tell her what I think and da-da-da. And I'm leaving. And she goes, "You know, you could do that. You could leave if you want to, or you could go back upstairs and tell those people what you think of them." I suppose that's an option. That's not really my style, but, you know, I'm just pissed off enough today, I think I might do that. So I go back upstairs, sit down, and somebody's sharing, and I've been to enough meetings, I know that if you jump in right when that guy finishes, they don't have time to call on the next guy, so that's what I did. My name is Mike, and on that night, I am an addict. Alcoholic. Now, keep in mind, they just closed this meeting 10 minutes ago. So I was making my point, and I was about to tell these guys exactly what I thought. And this is what I said. "I can't live like this anymore. I need some help." To this day, don't know why. That isn't what I wanted to say. That is not what I wanted to say. And then immediately, you know, everybody starts clapping. Well, that confused me, you know. It's like, show me something shiny, you know. What's the clapping about? And then I had to sit there. Well, I'd already gone back in, so I had to sit there for the rest of the hour and a half. And it took a long time to understand that that's part of my path. That has been part of my path, part of my story. in this program because I haven't found it necessary to drink since I got here. On a regular basis, God does for me what I can't or won't do for myself. Now, I didn't know that that's what was taking place when I said, I can't live like this anymore, I need some help. But that's what was taking place. So I finished this rehab stint, and this counselor walks me out to my car at the end of my little deal, and him and I kind of got into it a few times over. He used to grab me right here when he needed my attention. He'd grab me right here. Just infuriated me. So he gives me a big hug, and he grabs me by the neck, and he looks me in the eye, and he says, you know what? You've got a chance. Huh? What do you mean? Dude, we just paid a bunch of money. I got my books. I graduated from the program. You gave me my little coin. Chance? Does that make no sense to me? And I had an hour and a half to think about chance on the drive from Fresno to Bakersfield. And I thought about it the whole way. And the result of all that thought was when I got home, I was scared to death. Scared to death. So I ran to this little place called Oildale. And I started attending meetings. And, you know, the good thing for me was we had meetings in the morning, we had meetings at noon, we had meetings at night. And I was so scared, I went to them all. You know, a guy would stand up in the corner and he'd tell his story. And, you know, he'd been in prison half his life, which wasn't my story. But the underlying message to what he was saying hit me right here. How does he know that? And why is he saying it out loud in front of strangers? I need to go back and see what they're talking about. And then every once in a while I'd say something, and if I got called on, and they would say, yeah, keep coming back, you know. And that was just the process. Something I miss is the steps and the traditions being on the wall in the building so that you can look at them. I looked at them when I first got here, and I did them, you know, 5-10 minutes. I was done. Didn't get the whole tradition thing, but yeah, I can do all those things. That lasted for about 90 days, and then life began to happen sober as I was. And I knew all the things that you guys were telling me. You know, don't drink. Come sit with us. Listen to us. Share with us. Find somebody to talk to. There's somebody here. Find somebody to talk to. Have them help you with the steps. And then, in my case, oh, by the way, clean those ashtrays. That was my first initiation into service, washing ashtrays. I didn't smoke, but I washed ashtrays. One of the greatest feelings I ever had was washing ashtrays one night, leaving, and on my drive home from Oildale thinking, you know, I did that and nobody asked me to. And nobody said, that's the greatest ashtray washing we've ever seen. And more importantly, I didn't need them to say that. You know, I didn't need that level of attention all of a sudden. Doing those things makes this program pretty simple. There's just, you know, 4 or 5 things. They're pretty simple. And that's what I did. I started going. I started showing up, you know, and life started happening. I got fired for the first time in my life ever at 90 days sober. The IRS showed up on my doorstep for the first time ever at 90 days sober. Yeah, I think I might try that sponsor thing about now. That's how it went. And I got extremely lucky. I say lucky. The truth is, God did for me what I wouldn't do for myself in that moment. I wasn't going to use a sponsor when I got here. I knew better. And he provided me with a man that was exactly what I needed. He showed me what to do. He never told me what to do. He showed me through the book, he showed me through the steps, and he showed me in the way that he lived, good and bad. I saw this guy cry in a meeting. I don't know, I was probably 2 years sober by this point, Saturday afternoon, sitting on a bench. Nobody said a word to him, sitting there bawling his eyes out. All right, this is cool. My sponsor's got feelings, you know? I mean, this is a pretty cool deal. Go over to the next meeting. What's wrong? He was crying since Michigan had lost the Rose Bowl to USC that day. All right. This has got nothing to do with that book or the, you know? He is living life and showing us. He's showing us in this meeting. That's, you know, I've been in Visalia, been living here for, I don't know, a while, 18 months or something like that, and I talk a lot about Oildale. In this room that I got sober, I think, again, that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, taking me to a place where you got to see who I was immediately. It was okay for the first time ever in my life for me to cry because something was going on, or be mad and unreasonable and so far away from what we're trying to do here, that it wasn't even funny, and have somebody come over to me afterwards and go, hey, you know, you're a little out of balance here. That was the kind of place that I got sober in. I don't know exactly when it was. I used to walk early in the morning, take my dog out and walk. I can take you to the corner that I stepped off of. And I think this was in my first year, maybe it may have been second, whatever, but I stepped off this corner and all of the guilt of my entire life hit me in that exact moment, and I was a mess, but I'm a man, you know, I suck this up, I gotta go to work today, and you know, do that kind of stuff, and I go to the meeting that night, and I sit in the back of the meeting. I'm not about to say a word. Meeting's over. I get up, and I'm going. Now, I haven't spoken to not one person in this meeting, including my sponsor. No highs, no hellos, no nothing. Sat there for an hour and a half. And at this point, I really don't even know what's going on. It's just that something's not right, so I need to shut down here. You know, the mechanism needs some tuning up or whatever it happened to be. It needs to be shut down a little bit. As I'm leaving the building, a big hand grabs me by the shoulder, and it's this guy his name is Big Jim. And he was big. Puts both hands on my shoulders, turns me around, pushes me across the room and face to face with my sponsor, and says, Al, you need to talk to him. Turned around and walked off. Hadn't said a word to Jim, hadn't said a word to Al, but you know, I don't know what I was going to do about that whole guilt thing, you know? I was spent my whole life trying to not do that, you know? I was guilty over everything that I had ever done, but recognizing it, dealing with it, oh my gosh, make amends for it? You know, that just happened to be where I was at that particular time. And those kind of things have continued to happen for me from the day I got here till today. I am not what I used to term a big book thumper. I know where a couple of things are in the book because they hit me between the eyes. My approach has always been, I need to be as open as I can possibly be here. I don't need to be the guy in the room that knows everything. I really don't need to be the guy in the room that knows more than you. I need to be open so that if I have a question, if something comes up in my life today, what I do know, what I have learned, that I have no doubt in, is the answer that I'm looking for is in that book in some form or fashion. And if I have to go start at the front and read to the back to get it, that's a pretty small price to pay today. I'm willing to do that kind of thing today. I promise you, if I knew what paragraph 2, sentence 3 on page 99 was, I might not even be here, you know, but I do know this one, and the only reason I know it is because in the Daily Reflections book, this is the quote on my anniversary date, December 13th, is that, and I don't even know if I'll even quote this right, but it's that our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend on our constant thought of others and how we can meet their needs. The fact that that's on my anniversary date, that's one of those God doing for me what I wouldn't do for myself. That's how I view that. You know, you can do it any way you want. That's how I view that. And what that has done for me, what that helps me to do, is the one thing that this program has given me that, what I've been given is countless. But in this one area, it's the most freeing. It's the most freedom, the most relief that I get on a daily basis in sobriety. And that is, if I'm doing that, I'm not thinking about me. There is no thought of me, what I need, what I want, my selfish desires, if I'm trying to do something for somebody else. You know? And the way I read it, that doesn't have to apply to only alcoholics. That applies to how I should be living my life today. You know? That's a pretty big quote to me. And I'd love to tell you that I do it all the time. But I'm an alcoholic, and it just don't happen. You know, that's this process for me. You know, if you're new, again, welcome. You know, I view this as we have a path laid in front of us. My path is mine. It's mine, and it's mine alone, and it's right beside yours. This is a shared experience with a singleness of purpose. We're all doing the same thing, trying to do the same thing. And I'm going to skip down my path, and I'm going to think I've got things made pretty well, and I'm going to blink, and I'm going to look up, and I'm off the path a little bit. You know, and the difference between what it was like when I got here and today is, today I recognize pretty quick when I'm off the path. Before, you might have to send out a rescue party for me. You know, there was no telling where I was going when I left the path. I move a little quicker today down the path than I used to because I was afraid of every living, breathing thing when I got here. I enjoy the path much more today than I did when I got here. If this wasn't about being fun and being comfortable and witnessing and being part of growth, why would we do this? You know, our speaker, the big guest speaker, Mickey Bush, when he was here the day on a Sunday morning, he said something about, somebody had said something about having 24 hours a day, and he made the comment, and if all you want is 24 hours a day, then just chain yourself to a tree, and you'll be in first place in AA every day, you know. And I get all that. I mean, it's just all different perspectives, and we all get to have our own different, that kind of stuff. But there's some truth in that, where this path, this life takes us, it's beyond anything that I ever imagined. I had no clue that life could be like this. I had no clue that by doing the things that we suggest, not drinking, showing up here, sharing with you, trusting in a God that I understand, that things that used to be monumental problems for me are now kind of just get solved. And I really don't have to do a whole heck of a lot. That's kind of an amazing thing to me. I was prepared for that. I didn't understand this. 3 years before I got sober. 3 years exactly. December 13th, 1982. Why December 13th keeps popping up, I don't know. But apparently it means something to me. My sponsor's birth date was December 13th. My grandfather's birth date was December 13th. Apparently there's something in me in December 13th. On that day, I walked into a guy's house who was a Christian guy, and he'd been trying to convert me for years. He knew I was out of control, whatever. I went to his house to take a leak because I didn't think I could make it across town. And when he opened the door, I said, I can't live like this anymore. And I didn't have to go to the bathroom anymore either. It was like, what the heck? So I went through this whole conversion. I went through this whole deal. And it didn't work. It didn't take. 6 months later, I'm going down the road, drinking, changing the radio stations, cussing at God, because obviously this didn't work. Being sober, what I view that as today was, the God that I understand, that was my preparation. Because I think without that time, I would have fought that. That would have been the one thing that I would have fought when I got here. Really? God? Are you kidding me? Look at this room we're in. Look at these people I'm hanging out with. Are you kidding me? And the notion that I get to understand and decide for me, that was huge. Still is huge. And it has been absolutely the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, you know. This is there's a lot of talk. I've heard a lot of talk, especially if I say since I got here, about the circle and the triangle and, you know, the three legs and all those types of things. And it's all part of it, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous is much, much bigger today than it was when I got here. I know far less now than I thought I knew when I showed up the first time. Every day I get to be exposed to more and more and more. And in our book, it does talk about being open-minded, being willing. Well, the more I can do that, the more I get to receive, you know. And I know that whatever I receive, if I give it away, I get to stay here longer, you know. And I'm going to get more back. And that's kind of for me, is the circle. You know, it starts here in the morning, and I'm sober when I wake up. Hey, that's kind of new. And then I go around through this day, and at the end of the day, if I'm sober when I put my head on the pillow each night, that's been a good day. By comparison to where I came from, that has been a good day. Now, I may not have liked one darn thing that took place during the course of the day, but I'm miles ahead of where I was when I got here. And it will always, always be like that. For me, there can be no other solution. And that's what I would offer tonight is, whatever your path is, just start walking. Just take the steps. Don't let anybody tell you, if you get up in the morning and you're sober and you go to bed at night and you're still sober, that your path is wrong or that your path would be better if you did it a different way. Discover what your path is for you. Be open to that. You know, the God that I understand allows for that. And not only that, it allows for me not to judge your path. You know, and I don't have to accept anybody else's judgment of my path. You know, the requirement is that I have a desire to stop drinking. That's it. That's all it took. I thought for sure there'd be some blood oath or, you know, give my firstborn away, something like that. To get this? Are you kidding me? Well, what I've done will never, ever equal what I've received. It's impossible. There's no way for me to keep up. So the best I can do is be sober. That's it. The best I can do for me, it's the best that I can do for anybody else that I come in contact with. A family member that's drinking, an old high school buddy who's should have been here years ago, whatever it is, the best that I can do for them is be sober. When I first got sober, one of the sayings was, you may be the only big book anybody will ever see. I didn't understand that. This was my learning process. At 1 year sober, I go into Oildale. All these beautiful older women that were there had decorated the room, and they made my birthday, my first birthday, a big deal. And I couldn't believe it. And when it was over, I could have slithered under the door because I knew I didn't deserve it. At a year sober, I was miserable. At 5 years sober, I turned to the left where my sponsor always sat, and I said, this is 5 years. And he didn't say a word. At 10 years sober, I turned to my sponsor and I said, are you kidding me? And he didn't say a word. And at 15, I turned to him and I said, are you effing kidding me? That's where I was at 15 years. I couldn't believe that this is it. It's just, you know. And at 20 years, I turned to him and I said, oh, I got it. You know? Now, I don't mean I got it. I just mean, oh, you know? If I can get out of my own way, if I can quit fighting, if I can listen to you, I'm okay. When I listen to me, I'm usually not. So find your path and stay with us. Thank you.